My name is Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Now, this first question, I suppose, is, well, it kind of is. It's family dynamics,
yeah,
I suppose,
yeah,
and what can often happen. My son is an only child. I'm also a single parent. I don't get on with his wife. I'm now very upset that I've been banned from my granddaughter's Holy Communion. The daughter-in-law is swamped by sisters, brother-in-laws, etc. My son and I both are only children, so we only have each other. I'm beyond fuming. At the age of 79, don't deserve this treatment. Won't bore you with what happened. It was a misunderstanding about an outing, and I got the date wrong. I was trying to treat granddaughters before they went back to school. This was 2 years ago. I spend Christmases on my own, but this is the final nail in the coffin. I'm brokenhearted.
Oh my God, you can just feel that, can't you, while reading it? And I think in my work, Sean, actually family estrangement is something that's much more widespread than I think people are aware of.
Yeah.
You know, because it's loaded with shame and guilt and that those isolated feelings that come with it. So it's not something people speak about terribly openly. So it can feel like this is only happening in my world, but actually it's something I see a lot in mental health work. And it's such a painful thing. And I think what gets, you know, there's two sides to this, because often when we're talking about estrangement in family, we talk about how important it is for the estranger who's had to, you know, take themselves out of the family dynamic, whatever's going on for their own health and well-being, maybe. But also there's the other side of that. And being the estranged parent is a really difficult experience because your child is physically absent from your life, but psychologically very, very present.
Yes. Yeah.
Omnipresent even. So you have that piece. And as I said, the shame and the guilt that goes with it, but also social stigma, because people would be like, oh, I haven't seen your son around.
Yeah.
Or how are the grandchildren? And you don't know because you haven't been in their lives. So you get this kind of perpetual unresolved grief that comes with estrangement in this way. And a lot of that is bubbling from this little letter. And this is a little letter. This is a brief snippet. It's centered around the communion because I think these big milestone days often bring the pain that's there all the time,
yeah,
screaming to the surface. Mm. How will people think of this when they see that I'm not at the communion? This is not something I can shield or keep to myself. It will become out there. I also think there's something of note in this letter when this person says, you know, my son and I only have each other, but my daughter-in-law has all of these other people. But part of people forming a relationship and developing a family around that is actually it's not just you and your son.
Mm-hmm.
It's you, your son, his wife, her family, it's the children. Actually, your family is not you and your son. It's much, much bigger.
Though it must feel like that to
I
this
think
woman.
It absolutely, yeah, must. And I think there's something in that as well. And it's never just one incident that triggers an estrangement.
Sure. Yeah.
But it can be that there's this one thing that seems to be the point that things have been severed. But there may well have been a bubbling pattern. This person does say, I don't get on with his wife. Mm. You know, it is never too late and it is always worthwhile to invest in repair in ruptured relationships. I really believe that. I don't think it's easy, Sean.
Mm.
And I think,
yeah,
you have to go, you know, very cautiously and carefully in a very considered way. And that starts with accountability, even if, and maybe especially if, you don't think you were all in the wrong. None of us ever think we were all in the wrong, by,
yeah,
the way. But to take accountability for whatever your part of this is, and that you might write to your son and daughter-in-law, send a card. I think sometimes giving something in writing allows people to read it, get cross about it, reread it and reread it and maybe process it in a different way. But if you do that, you should only use I statements. I'm sorry, I miss you, I wish, I regret, I apologize, and not because of what you did.
Yeah.
Because the risk of the blame game is so high in these kinds of situations. But I think you could also state, I really miss you all, and I would like to do whatever is necessary to repair our relationship. And then you have to leave it with them. And I think that's what's so difficult and can result in this feeling of powerlessness with estrangement, is you can open that door, you can reach out, you can initiate repair, but you have to get something back.
Mm.
And you can't control that.
Yeah.
And so I think it's actually a real, it's an act of vulnerability to put yourself out in that way. I also think, look, writing to them, I think it's communion season imminently, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you were going to do this, do it soon or wait until after the communion, because maybe a big, huge day, there's two ways of looking at it. Is that really the day to do a repair when you haven't seen them in 2 years? It also might be the day because there's so many people around, it's less intense.
Spreads it out. Yeah.
I can see both sides. But regardless, sending a card to your granddaughter, if it's within your means, maybe sending flowers to your daughter-in-law for the day that's in it, you could still do a reach out in that way. But I think talking with your son and listening, not just talking. And I think with estrangement, and particularly when it comes to the repair, what I see in my work is that exercise of listening and being able to take on things that you may not agree with, that you hadn't considered, because the perspective of the other will always be other than what the story you've been telling yourself for 2 years. But I do think this letter really brings to the surface the isolation and loneliness that family estrangement can bring.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a very painful experience.
Yeah. Can the son do anything, I wonder? Or is he kind of stuck in the middle between these?
Yes, because I don't think this, and I don't mean this to sound like it's about you making repair with your daughter-in-law. It's actually with your son and daughter-in-law. And the letter would be to your son as well. And if you still have any kind of, it doesn't sound like it though, but connection to him, actually meeting him and maybe in a kind of going out for a drive, going out for lunch, you know, something in a neutral territory where you can talk with him and just, but again, it has to come, if it's a genuine repair that you're pursuing, it has to come from that place of accountability. It has to come from, I am sorry, I regret, I miss you, and I will do what's necessary to fix this.
Yeah.
It cannot be, she shouldn't have, you shouldn't have, because all that's going to do is reignite whatever started 2 years ago.
Yeah. My wife and I have two small kids, 6 and 4. We are currently planning a holiday to California this summer to see my in-laws. I'm absolutely dreading the journey. I just don't know how we will keep the kids entertained on an 8-hour flight. Have you any advice on whether to book a morning or evening flight? And how can I help them to adjust with the jet lag once we land so they can sleep at night during the holiday? We have a strict no screens policy in our house, but I am aware that the long haul flights often have movies. We are, of course, willing for them to watch these on the flight, but because they're not used to screens, I'm not sure it will be of much interest to them.
Oh, I think actually lots of people listening will have what has tried and tested, worked and failed on this. Pack colouring books and stickers. Okay, stickers are your friend, especially the age that your children are. Stickers are a currency for children. So I think stickers, colouring books, you know, the little temporary tattoos.
Yeah.
I'd have those with me too. I'd have any comfort items, little stuffies they're particularly fond of, or a little soft blanket they like to put on themselves, maybe sitting on the sofa reading books. Plenty of snacks that they like. Do not rely on airports or airplanes for food for children. And it'll be one of those where you go, I think they've overeaten on the snacks. Yes, no doubt. Go with it. That's fine. Everything is allowed on a flight to get through it. And entertainment. And entertainment for them, it may not be screens. Lots of people will have little kids' iPad-y type things, tablet things for the, but that's okay if not. I've never used those on a flight either. But if you have one of those Yoto or Tony boxes. Do you know those little story box things? Mm. If you have those, they can be very handy because they can switch and change between stories. It keeps the stimulation level quite high for them, and it allows them to kind of regulate what's going to work for them at different times. But I would bring books as well.
Yeah.
And particularly books that you can read to them. So some kind of a chapter book, but also picture books that they can be self-occupied with. All of that, I think. Another thing that I got, I actually went and bought loads of these, so I give them as gifts to everybody I know. Digital X's and O's, it's tic-tac-toes. Now, it just runs on a battery, okay? And you can play yourself by playing the game, or you can do two-player and play each other. It is one of the biggest hits for €8. Best €8 I've ever spent in my life. And I actually got Cogs Toys and Games have them, but I'm sure you'll get them other places too. But while I was in there, because I wanted to check the price, while I was in there, I also saw a little deck of cards, which was 50 things to do on an airplane.
Huh.
And I was like, well, something in the air for this time and season. Yeah. But all of those, and just to say about the screens, it's absolutely fine and great that you've no screens at home, you know, normally. An in-flight movie will do no harm and could be valid for all of you to be able to put headphones on. So bringing headphones for any devices you're bringing, if you are, but also being aware some of the airplane headphones, if they're the ones that fit in ears, don't work for kids. So you might need your own headphones as well for that. But don't reject the in-flight movie.
Yeah.
I think it could, in terms of flying day or night, that's really a parental call because you could be saying, oh, well, fly at night and they'll sleep. But if you have children who won't sleep on a plane, now all you're doing is staying awake all night.
Yeah.
And they might have been better with a night's sleep. So if you think they would sleep, put them in loose, comfy clothing, pajama-like clothing, and get them to sleep. Brilliant. Of course, do that. But if they're not going to sleep on the plane, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Now, if they will sleep on the plane, maybe is it better to go on the evening flight? Now, obviously,
absolutely,
you're gaining time, so it'll be earlier when you arrive.
When you're going to be kind of doing the same day twice.
Yeah. Thing.
And then in jet lag, I don't know, they probably feel it more coming home. But if you can avoid it in one way, it's to try and catch in with whatever time you land, try to go to bed at whatever would be bedtime and just try and get them into that routine. But just try and get through the flight. It's an 8-hour flight. Don't overthink it, but just make sure there's entertainment.
Yeah.
And snacks.
Oh, yes, snacks. Seeking advice of how I manage my 3-year-old. The issue is she complains a lot, whinges, can't seem to get on with things. For example, this morning she woke up cranky earlier than usual and was crying and whinging in her cot, pointing at things without using her words. I said, let's go down for breakfast. Stand up and I'll lift you out of your cot. She wanted to, but then she wouldn't stand up and then pretended to try and fall down repeatedly. This is common in other settings too. So I said, all right, I'll come back when you're ready to stand up. I can't lift her from the cot when she's not standing because she's heavy now and I'm pregnant. But when I left the room to get dressed and give her a minute, she was bawling. It was such a stressful start to the day for all of us. Seems to really affect my husband negatively too. Then he lifted her up and she got into our bed for a while, but was still sobbing and pointing at things. Eventually she perked up and we got some breakfast. But this is common behaviour. And I'm wondering what we're doing wrong. I wish she could be a happier child. We do plenty of nice things on the weekends, but she's usually complaining her way through 50% of the day. Maybe she needs more independence. When I try to encourage this, she reverts to baby behaviours, the pointing, pretending, falling, etc., and refuses to do things independently. I find myself getting cross internally and trying to gently explain to her that there is no need for all the complaining.
Oh, I just want to start with a little in defense of the whingers.
Yes.
Okay. Whinging or whining, whatever language you want to use, is a typical phase of childhood. And the reason children do it is because it is super effective.
Yeah,
it absolutely gets what they want, which is it elicits a response from their parents. It pulls you to them, even if you're just scolding them and telling them not to whine, you're still coming over to them. The other thing I would say is it's typically an expression of some unmet need. Now, I don't want what I'm about to say to sound like I'm saying these parents are neglecting their child. Yes. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, because what are we doing wrong?
But you know, unmet need to a 3-year-old is very different to what we adults would say, do you know what, she's perfect. Perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And when I say unmet need, it's really children tend to whinge when they're hungry.
Yeah.
When they're tired, when they're unwell, and when they're seeking more connection. I know it's counterintuitive. It's like, because the whinging and whining of toddlers can be a bit like nails on a chalkboard to the brain of an adult. But it is around children this age lacking emotional fluency to otherwise express frustration. So the whinge and the whine, and they learn quickly how effective it is because it pulls you into them. And I also just think you're saying you're encouraging independence. I'm actually going to ask you to stop doing that because you're pregnant. There's a new baby coming and you have a three-year-old who is showing signs of regression.
Yeah.
And that's not a surprise because even if you're like, well, I'm not that pregnant and she doesn't know, if there's a knowing, not knowing. Sometimes they just know that something is changing. You're pulling away a bit. I would actually increase nurture. Kisses, cuddles, holding, rocking, swaying, sitting with her kind of scooped up under your arm or on your lap, depending on how robust, physically robust a three-year-old she is. But doing lots of that story reading together, counting her little piggy toes, reading the lines on her hand. That's something that's really nice to do because you can always, and they're always positive lines you're finding, by the way.
Yes, of course, yes.
You know, you're such a great little friend. You're going to be such a great sister. You're great at playing with your friends in preschool. You're a great listener. I love playing with you. Whatever you want to find. But what you're doing is you're holding one of her hands in your other hand while your spare hand with your index finger is rubbing those along her palm. So she's getting a lot of sensory input and touch and it's very regulating. Increase her sensory, messy, tactile play. Lots and lots of it. And if you can feel shivers down your spine as I'm saying that, shake it off, do it outside. The weather's finally getting better. A bit of chalk outside. Getting her to play like that is going to be really, really helpful. I would also wake her up with a snack.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm on team snack today.
You are, yeah.
I would wake her up with a snack.
But she's waking up hungry.
Because I think she's waking up hungry and that's why she's waking up in a whinge.
Yeah.
So I think if you bring her up a little piece of toast or whatever it is, and then she can have her proper breakfast, for want of a better phrase, when she's downstairs. But I would say, good morning, there you go. Straight away.
Yeah.
A drink and a piece of toast.
Just going back to the flying family, I purchased an inflatable stool type thing from Amazon that you can put between the seat and the back of the seat in front of you. So it's almost extending your child's seats and they can lie out and go to sleep.
I know this thing. Yeah, it lets them rest their legs as well because their little legs otherwise would be dangling and it's not always very comfortable for a long time.
That's an interesting idea.
So many gadgets for this. Yeah.
Our 14-year-old daughter gets very nervous if a photograph is being taken. When we have family gatherings, she shies away from them and being in them or will stand at the back somewhat hidden away. Unlike her classmates, she's no time for selfies or anything like that. I worry about it because I am concerned that she might be ashamed of the way she looks. She doesn't want to talk about it and simply dismisses photos as silly and a waste of time. But I think there is something deeper going on. She isn't interested in fashion either, whereas a lot of her schoolmates would be all big into that. What can we do to get her to be more open?
Oh, meet her where she's at.
Yeah,
Accept her for who and how she is. The fashion thing, who cares? I wouldn't worry about that at all. But be very aware at 14 and even just think back to your own 14-year-old self. You know, I absolutely remember this and not wanting to be in photos and not wanting, because you have such an increased focus on yourself, on your body image, on how you perceive others perceive you.
Yeah.
So you're kind of second guessing all the time yourself. Self-esteem takes a battering at this age. And, you know, you can't force her to feel better about herself. Of course, you can drip feed that lovely parental esteem into her, but I wouldn't focus on how she looks and telling her you look beautiful. I would actually talk about how she is, who she is, how she behaves, how clever she is, how smart she is, how considerate, how sensitive, how she picks up on things. I would build self-esteem from the inside out.
Yeah.
Because actually just telling her she's beautiful, she will literally roll her eyes and say, you have to say that you're my parent.
Yeah.
And it's not going to make a difference. I just think to also, she's 14, get to know what she's interested in. You're very aware of what doesn't interest her.
Yeah.
But get to know what she is interested in, even if it's something that you know nothing about. Trust that she knows a lot about it. And by simply expressing curiosity and interest, she can talk to you or tell you about it or go and find out about whatever it is she's into. Go for drives with her, chat on drives about whatever little common interest, walks, asking to see some of, if she's online, any content creators that she's into, what kind of stuff does she, spend time looking at. I think express interest in that and ask to see it so you can better understand her. I would rather that you focus on playfulness and laughter in the relationship and fun, in other words, and that she experiences shared joy with you. Because when people experience shared joy with someone who loves them, what they're really experiencing is, I'm enjoyable.
Yes. Yeah.
And that in itself is a high dose of self-esteem. And I think I wouldn't forget about the fashion and the photos and any of that. Forget about any of that and just meet her where she's at.
Yeah. It could be a sign of confidence, though.
Yeah.
If she thinks I just reject all that stuff.
Yeah.
Could be.
It could be.
Yeah.
No, it could be. And the no time for selfies, that's absolutely a valid expression, by the way. It simply may not be something that she's interested in.
Yeah.
But just keep the self-esteem, 14 years old, critical time, especially for girls.
I'm a father of an 11-year-old girl. Her mum and I separated 2.5 years ago. I recently started a relationship with someone new, and my daughter is unhappy about it. She seems okay with the separation, but told me she doesn't want me to be in a new relationship. I'm with my partner about 6 months, told my daughter about the new situation a month ago. She met my new partner at the weekend and was really rude to her and is refusing to spend any more time with her and told me we should break up. Her mother is still single, but our relationship is amicable and she says she's happy for me to have met someone. We are planning on moving in together at the end of next month. I don't want to pressure my daughter, but I feel she's being a bit unreasonable and really wants her to come around. I deserve to be happy too. I can hardly ask my partner to leave her new home every Wednesday or other weekend when my daughter stays with me once we move in together. I haven't told my daughter or my ex about the plan to move in as the weekend went so badly, but we can't put it off due to rental circumstances my partner has.
Oh, there's a lot going on here.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So much. And you told her in the last month that you have a partner and then she met the partner and now very soon the partner's going to be living. It's a lot. Okay?
Yeah,
it's a lot
is,
very
yeah.
quickly. And be a child being okay with their parents being separated and then a child being okay with either parent starting a new relationship. Very different things, you know, really different, because even she may not even have consciously known it herself, but she may have been holding on to a fantasy that one day mum and dad would get back together.
Yeah.
And suddenly you having somebody else and somebody else that you care enough about that you wanted her to meet, that then kind of pops the bubble of that fantasy for her. And it opens up all these new fears or anticipations. Maybe you'll have a new family. Maybe things will change. Maybe I will. And all of these maybes are coming up. So it feels like she's activated by fear, actually, around all of this change. I do think you have to talk to your ex and very quickly explaining the new living arrangements that are coming, because it might be best if both you, because it's amicable, both you and your ex sit together with your daughter and actually talk to her together so that you can tell her, but her mum is there to provide emotional support or hold her hand or help her to understand that. Rather than waiting till she's with you, you tell her and then she's got to stay with you while feeling angry with you. I then think you could take your daughter out and acknowledge for her, you know, change is really difficult, and remind her. She'll probably say, I know that, but still remind her that your love for her will never change.
Yeah.
She is allowed to have feelings about this, but she is not allowed to be rude to somebody. I do think a boundary is important there. She is allowed to be unhappy. She is allowed to be angry about it, but it's not acceptable to be rude to somebody else. And ensure, with all of the change going on in your life, and it is exciting for this parent as well, you know, partners moving in, there's a lot of change happening. Ensure that you still have one-to-one time with her when she's with you, and don't force the relationship between her and your new partner. Trust that it will come and give it space and time, but don't force it.
Yeah. In the given that the, you know, she's only met this partner
briefly once. Briefly once.
That didn't go so well. And now this partner is moving in.
It's huge.
Is there an argument for some sort of, I don't know what the best phrase is, a kind of bedding in period where you know, that maybe the daughter doesn't come over as much, or maybe dad meets her in outside in neutral venues, that kind of thing.
Take her out. I think absolutely. If she says, well, if that person's living there, I'm not coming, don't get into a battle over that. Say, it's really important to me that I still see you. So we can do outings, we can go for a walk. It doesn't have to be always throwing money at the situation and doing activities.
Yeah.
But we can just hang out and go for a walk. I can come see you in your home. I will see you. Mm. You're saying, I will turn up and I will be here for you, and give that some time, because she may need to exert some power herself in the situation. But you do want to keep that door open and say to her, I'd love if you would stay over. I'd love if you'd come. Your room is still here, whatever it might be. So I think keep it open. But yeah, she's 11 years old. I think you could possibly anticipate that she's going to lash out in some way like that. Well, you've taken the control from me. I'm not going to come and see you. Yeah. And that's not a rejection of you. It's an expression of, I'm overwhelmed by all of this change. I don't feel prepared for it, and I'm upset and angry.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.